Hello, I'm Richard Allibone. My guests and I, talking on Web Talk Radio, will show you that paranormal is normal. There is no such thing as paranormal. If you've ever had some sort of experience, you probably have wondered what it's all about and probably decided that there is no explanation. So, in time, you just forget it. You start to disbelieve it ever happened, because there is no explanation. Though in consequence, most people just don't believe in the paranormal. There is no evidence, so it can't happen, therefore it doesn't happen. But knowing how and why these things happen can make all the difference between disbelieving and believing. Whether the experience is your own or experience of others. Personally, I've spent about 70 years trying to understand the paranormal by getting involved as much as possible. I studied hypnosis and meditation, speaking in tongues. I joined the SPR, Society for Psychical Research, did some ghost hunting, all these sort of things. And I read a lot of books. And the evidence that is there gives some indication of what the paranormal is all about. But with a few bold ideas, I managed to fill the gaps, which explained the evidence available as to how and why the paranormal works. In writing a book called Sublimity, I made a lot more discoveries. I found that things fitted together like a jigsaw puzzle. When you write, you have to think much more carefully and logically about things, and it certainly paid off as far as I was concerned. And I soon realized that the paranormal consists of either trance or telepathy. There don't seem to be any other experiences that people have which don't fit into those two categories. Now, each week we're going to look at one aspect of the paranormal. I'm going to have guests that talk of their experiences, and later in the show we're going to have a segment where I examine how and why these experiences that my guests have might be explained. But now it's guest time. My guest today is Rupert Sheldrake, who is one of the world's most innovative biologists, and he's well known for his work on telepathy, having contributed probably more than anyone else to the science of telepathy. His work on biology has suggested that the universe has its own inherent memory, which he calls the theory of morphic fields. He's the author of 10 books and 80 scientific papers, but is most widely known for his work on telepathy. I've recorded this interview with him, and I'm afraid I used a very poor telephone. Now, today my guest is Dr. Rupert Sheldrake, a well-known biologist. Hello, Rupert.
Hello.
Hello. Now, you've been doing research with animals for a good many years about animal telepathy. To what extent, I ask, is your work accepted?
Well, it depends by whom. For most people who keep pets, there's no problem at all in thinking that pets are telepathic because they've observed it themselves. They think it's something that's quite normal. And sometimes when I give lectures to unsophisticated audiences, you know, people say, why do you waste your time trying to prove what everyone already knows? So the idea that dogs know when their owners are coming home, that cats can pick up people's intentions, that horses respond to their riders in subtle ways that may not just be physical clues. These sorts of ideas are very common among people who work with animals. So in that sense, my evidence from experiments that animals really are telepathic is not surprising. On the other hand, for people who are dedicated skeptics, it's usually dogmatic materialists who have an ideological belief that the mind is in the brain and no mental phenomena can occur that aren't simply confined to the inside of the head. From their point of view, telepathy is impossible, and no amount of evidence would persuade them it really happens because they're convinced it can't happen. So the only question for them is how to explain away the evidence. It must be either because of experimental flaws or fraud. So dealing with skeptics is another matter. You see that the diehard dogmatic skeptics, they just don't want to know. But I find that most scientists are actually quite open-minded, partly because they've had telepathic experiences themselves with telephone calls, thought of someone who then rings, or they have pets that pick up their thoughts or intentions. And so I find most scientists, at least in private, are really quite open to the evidence and curious and interested.
Yes, I hear what you say, and I found the same myself. People in general are quite happy to accept about telepathy and dogs who know when their owners are coming home and all the rest. Another interesting animal, of course, are parrots. I know you've done work with one particular parrot. Are there other parrots that have exhibited the same telepathic experiences?
Yes, well, parrots, particularly African greys, form very strong bonds with people and do seem exceptionally sensitive. So I have a lot of examples of seemingly telepathic parrots. Some know when their owners are coming home and they get excited and sometimes call out their name before they arrive. Some know who's on the phone and say who it is before the person even picks up the receiver. Some read their owner's thoughts and say what their owners are thinking in English. For talking parrots, it's a most remarkable thing that they can actually speak out what other pets can only show by their movements, but parrots can actually talk. I think there is a lot of evidence, really, that parrots can be telepathic with their owners. And in a way, it's rather surprising because dogs have been domesticated for probably 20, 30, 40,000 years or more, cats for at least 5,000 years. But most African greys and other parrots that people keep today were caught in the wild or only one or two generations captive bred. So it's rather surprising that with relatively little exposure to human beings, they form such strong bonds and such a remarkable ability to speak and to use language meaningfully and to pick up human thoughts.
Yes, yes, it is. It is quite amazing. I've watched your video and heard you lecture on Nikisi, the parrot in the US who has a vast vocabulary of language and as well as being very telepathic. Now, I wondered if you've done much work with horses. I know that a lot of horse owners say that horses seem to understand. Has there been any, sort of scientific sort of research with horses, as you've done with dogs and cats and so on.
Yes. I've mainly done experiments with a horse that knows when its owner's coming. And we did some filmed experiments with that horse. We've done some others with horses who know when someone's coming. In this particular case, the horse went and waited at the end of the field where the owner was going to come and feed it. And it started waiting there, about 10 minutes before she arrived. And we tried it out with her coming at random times, setting off at randomly chosen times. We filmed the horse, and sure enough, the horse did indeed seem to know when she was coming. This is a bit like dogs knowing when their owners are coming home. And we did some experiments with horses in America, too, that showed a rather similar response. Of course, the main ways in which horses pick up their owner's intentions is when they're being ridden. And many people are convinced that the horse can pick up their intention, where they want to go, which way they want to turn. But it's hard to prove that's telepathic, because there could also be subtle body movements that the owners are unconscious of. So it's harder to prove. So it's easier to do these experiments when the person is far away from the horse.
Mm. Yes, that's similar, of course, to the sort of experience people have with dogs who know when they're coming. Cats, in general, aren't quite the same, but I believe cats seem to know when their owner is getting the basket out to take them to the vet.
Yes, well, that's one of the ways cats pick up their owner's intentions. They do it in a variety of ways. I mean, quite a lot of cats know when their owners are coming home and go and wait at the door or window. Not such a high proportion as dogs, but about 30% of cats do that, compared with about 50% of dogs. But one of the things that cats particularly dislike is being taken to the vet, and some of them sense when their owner's planning to take them. Even before they've seen the owner get out the carrying basket, they hide. And for a lot of owners, this is particularly annoying, because they can't find the cat when they need to take it to the vet. And some of them, you know, after this happens a few times, they have to go to great lengths to try and avoid giving the cat clues, but the cat still seem to pick it up. I know this is common, because we did a survey of veterinary clinics, all the veterinary clinics listed in the North London Yellow Pages. And we found that almost all of them, all but one, said that people frequently missed appointments with their cat because they couldn't find it. The one exception said that it happened so often they'd given up the appointment system for cats. People just had to arrive with them. But there are also cases where cats respond to their owner's thoughts even when they're distant. Quite a lot of people have found that the cat might be in the garden or in a different room in the house, and they want the cat to come to them. And they just have to sit and think that they want to see the cat, as it were, silently call the cat to them, and within a couple of minutes it trots into the room. I think cats are actually quite sensitive to their owner's thoughts and intentions, but a lot of the time they're just not very interested. So they don't show as much response as dogs, but I think that's largely because they can't be bothered sometimes, or it's not in their interest to do so.
Yes, that's probably true. I know that we used to have a black cat, and my late wife only had to just think, "I will feed the cat," and she invariably saw the cat running down the long garden that we had.
That would be a classic example of the kind of thing that I'm talking about, yes.
I mean,
when it's in their own interests, you know, like being fed, they're very attentive and responsive to people's intentions.
Mm. Yes. Now, Rupert, I want to take a break now, and I shall be discussing in this segment of the show about how and why the paranormal is normal.
And this, of course, is what my show is all about. People have always had strange experiences which they don't understand, but the fact is that all these experiences fall into two categories, that is either trance or telepathy. My book Sublimity has demystified both of these, and that explanation shows how and why paranormal is normal. This week it's all about telepathy. Firstly, between humans and animals, and then Rupert is going to talk about his book, The New Science of Life, which for me is the beginning of the explanation of telepathy. The science of biology has failed to explain life, but Dr. Sheldrake has shown that life is directed by a species memory. Over 30 years ago, I was saying much the same as Rupert, that life is directed by cells speaking to the cells of other members of the species. This I logically called cytotelesis. In other words, the telepathy of biology, where cells speak to cells. This is all very radical thinking, of course. But as well as applying to the different parts of the body, it does also apply to the cells in the brain and the way that the brain grows. It does seem that the cells in the brain receive information, which we call instinct, which is an important part of our lives, both of humans and the animal species. So here we have a very important new idea, and it gives the possibility of brain information going from one member of the species to another. In other words, telepathy. It's all a bit complicated, but it does explain the possibility of why we have telepathy between one person and another. So, you see, there must be something that carries this information from cell to cell or from person to person. And this carrier doesn't appear to be anything to do with the carrier of radio or television. But there is some scientific evidence that shows what the carrier is and where it comes from, even though it's largely misunderstood or ignored by scientists, particularly the scientists in the West. So, if we have a carrier and a biological explanation of what that carrier is, then we're just beginning to understand how and why there is such a thing as telepathy. That's telepathy between one person and another. However, we've learnt that it's more likely to occur between friends and family. But animals in the wild sometimes seem to know when they are being watched by a predator, which helps with their survival. And this is slightly different from the usual form of telepathy. This is telepathy which goes across the species barrier. Humans sometimes know when someone is watching them, and Rupert Sheldrake has recently published a book about this called The Sense of Being Stared At. The point I'm coming to is that in the animal kingdom there is telepathy across the species barrier, as well as telepathy between family and friends. So it's easy to understand how a dog knows when its owner decides to come home. It uses telepathy from its master as friend to friend, but also across the species barrier as a dog being stalked by a predator. So it's not really difficult to understand how dogs can be telepathic with their owners. In fact, if you think about it, it's all fairly logical.
Okay, now back again with Rupert. The I have a book in by the side of me. It is The Hypothesis of Formative Causation, which you wrote, I see it was 30 years ago, and it was entitled The New Science of Life. And it starts off, and it's really about these unresolved problems of biology. Do you think they've been resolved as yet?
Well, no, they haven't. And that's why a new edition of my book's just come out in England and in the US. In the US, the new edition is called Morphic Resonance. The publishers changed the title. But I've completely rewritten the book and brought it up to date with all the latest evidence. The basic problems, unsolved problems of biology, are still unsolved. And that's why I think we actually need a new science of life. And among those problems are understanding how organisms grow, how embryos develop, how animals inherit instincts, and how consciousness works. Now, in the 1980s, most people thought that just by studying genes and sequencing genomes, we'd understand everything about life in molecular terms. Well, the Genome Project's been a big disappointment, and we now realize that a great deal of heredity is not explained in the way that people naively assumed it would be. This is now called the missing heritability problem. So I think that many of the problems of biology still are unsolved, and that's why I think we need a fresh approach, a more holistic approach.
Yes. I haven't, of course, read your new book, but I like to call it telepathy rather than morphic resonance or formative causation. Do you think that telepathy and formative causation use the same mechanism?
Well, it's a difficult question. It's partly a question of how we choose to define words. I mean, we can use words to mean whatever we like, but I make a distinction between morphic resonance and telepathy because I see telepathy as a communication in the present between organisms that are linked through social bonds. Most telepathy between people and animals happens between owners and their pets. Between people and people happens between closely related members of families, close friends, and so forth, identical twins. It doesn't usually happen with strangers. Whereas morphic resonance is a kind of memory principle. The theory of morphic resonance is that each species has a kind of collective memory and draws upon the experience of other animals or people in the past. So what I'm saying is that if you train rats to learn a new trick, rats all over the world should learn the same trick quicker. Now, in that sense, it's rather like telepathy. But how it differs from telepathy is that telepathy normally occurs only between closely related organisms that know each other. They're part of the same social group. And secondly, telepathy normally happens in the present, whereas morphic resonance can happen from 10 years ago, 20 years ago, 50 years ago. It's a memory principle. So I would say that telepathy, when it occurs in the present, is similar to morphic resonance, but it's much more restricted. Morphic resonance is a much more general phenomenon because it's a memory phenomenon not confined to the present and not confined to organisms that know each other well.
Yes, that's probably very true. Coming to the end, actually, now, perhaps you could remind me of your website so that our listeners can have a look at a great deal of information that you have on there.
Yes, the website is sheldrake.org, www.sheldrake, sheldrake.org, O-R-G. And on my website, there's a lot of information, details of the new edition of my book, Dogs That Know When Their Owners Are Coming Home, released in April 2011, just newly released a completely new and updated edition of the book, and also details of how to take part in experiments, particularly experiments on telephone telepathy using mobile telephones. I have some experiments that work in the UK and the US, and I'd be very happy if any listeners would like to take part and find out how telepathic they are on the telephone. It involves doing it with two people who are close friends or family members. It's fun to do, it's free, and easily and easy. So do please have a go.
Yes, well, that's nice. I've watched from your website many times the video of the Nolan sisters. I think that's absolutely terrific. I hope perhaps some of our listeners will do that. It's a very fascinating website video. Rupert, it has been a great pleasure talking to you. Thank you so much for
speaking, Richard,
on my show.
Yes.
And I think maybe we're both somewhat of the same mind in that the paranormal is normal. Thank
Absolutely.
You very much.
I think the word paranormal is quite the wrong word for it. It's normal. It simply doesn't fit in with some of the more dogmatic theories of materialistic scientists. But I'm sure science will expand to include it.
Thank you so much, Rupert, for being my guest on Web Talk Radio. I've really enjoyed hearing what you have to say about psychic animals and also hearing your views on the science of life and what it is that causes cells to grow to form a complete body with brain and mind, which has an operating system and a library of instinctive information. Science has failed to show us how DNA and its genes organize growth. Maybe genes are just a code enabling the reception of growth information. Since publishing my book, Sublimity, I've added all my latest ideas and thoughts to my website, which you may care to visit. It's www.sublimity.org.uk. That's sublimity.org.uk. Afraid I've come to the end of this show now, so I thank you for listening to Web Talk Radio, and please join us again next time.